is on.
And live from our national studios here in Accra, networking with all our regional FM stations and across the globe on gbcghana.com, we say welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program, where we will be speaking on the issues to the experts and the newsmakers. My name is Kingsley Obinchere. For tonight, Parliament Vetting Committee grills three ministers designate without the MPP members. What were some of the issues that came up at today's vetting? Did the minority MPP's absence on today from today's vetting of ministerial appointees take some shine off the process? And for football, Ghana's national team, the Black Stars, this afternoon put one over their Malian counterparts in a tie Group B match of the African Cup of Nations competition in South Africa. But is this enough to make the quarterfinals? We'll be exploring the issues. And out of this country, the Mali crisis and refugee situation. What are the aid agencies doing about it? Behind the News, and as usual, we'll be taking your comments and contributions on 026-301-7882. 026-301-7882. That is our text line. The minority MPP in Parliament today stuck to its decision to boycott the vetting of ministerial nominees. The Appointments Committee, however, went ahead with the vetting of three of the nominees. Did the absence of the minority group take anything away from the vetting today? Our parliamentary correspondent, Augustus Akwe, sat in the proceedings, and we have him joining us on the line as we examine what transpired. Hello, Augustus. I guess there's a bit of a challenge on that line. We'll try to raise him and get back to him in just a moment.
We are moving the revenue collection system to an electronic platform that is underway, all aimed at improving the efficiency of revenue collection in the system. Many of our tax laws are 15 years old, some are actually 20. We want to do a comprehensive review of the three major tax laws: VAT, income tax, customs, and indeed do a tax administration act. So one of my priorities, you know, would be to work with the August House to make sure that we give the country new tax laws. We are doing reorganization. We are improving processes and systems, including electronic platforms. We would depend on the goodwill of the House to help us give the nation new and improved tax laws.
That is the Minister of Finance designate Seth Tekpe on the line. Let's see if we have Augustus rejoining us. Hello, Augustus. There is still a bit of a challenge there. Hello, Augustus. Hello, Augustus. Well, that challenge we'll try to restore. But let's listen to another member, another nominee who spoke on the issues during the vetting.
Indeed, the situation in Mali is quite troubling. There has been an insurgency in Mali since the beginning of last year. There has been the takeover of the northern part of Mali by some terrorist groups and extremists, Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, among others, that have created a situation where Mali has in fact become unstable. Indeed, my understanding was that at the time when the interim president of Mali invited French intervention to help them to deal with the rebel insurgency, it was because they were hours away from their capital, which was Bamako. And I think that it would have been a very serious threat to all of us within the sub-region if that country had been overridden by terrorist-related organizations. Indeed, Ghana has committed to also providing troops for the African Intervention Force, African-led intervention in Mali. But we are committed to sending a company from the Field Engineers Regiment, as I understand, of 120 officers. Now, on the issue of Ghanaians having difficulty in accessing passports, especially as they are residing out of the country, indeed, that goes back to the whole issue of providing the passport services in the missions outside of Ghana. My understanding is that we have a program for rollout of that locally. The next major investment has to be in providing these services in our embassies. But obviously, it may be difficult for us to do this simultaneously in all our missions at the same time. What I would advocate is for us to do it perhaps on a pilot basis in the missions where we have the most demand for the issuance of Ghanaian passports.
That is the Minister Designate for Foreign Affairs, Hannah Tete as we try to get our other resource persons on the line and our correspondents. So us in Parliament, we want to head straight to South Africa. And on this occasion, you are already aware about the results. This afternoon, when Ghana played Mali, it was 1-1. We have our correspondent, George Latte, who ran commentary directly. It was 1-0 in favor of Ghana. I know many Ghanaians will not be very happy to hear that draw scoreline. Yes, George Latte, you are welcome.
Thank you very much, Kingsley.
George, naturally, can you tell us the feeling of the Ghanaians who were at the stadium?
Thank you very much, Kingsley, once again. Now, all of the Ghanaians that are swimming to the Nelson Mandela Bay Stadium came here with the sole aim of watching and embracing a victory against Mali, and that is exactly what transpired a couple of hours ago. Now, the Ghanaians are coming with so much determination, talk of the team itself. They came with so much determination, so much zeal, and so much zeal, I should say. And then, you know, everybody thought that was it for Ghana. And of course, we all, you know, are sat here and then watch the feeling. We were very happy when the referee drew it for the end of the game. It was a well-held strategy adopted by the coach. And of course, a deserving victory for Ghana. For now, Ghana has beaten Mali, and Ghana for now top the table. But let me tell you, Mali still has a chance of qualifying. What we're waiting patiently for is another victory that we are yet to record. And now, definitely, the opening is there for us to stay back here in Port Elizabeth.
Yes, even though you talk about the fact that there is some joy in camp and people are happy, some are also expressing some reservations that it wasn't a vintage performance.
Well, over here, as you rightly put it, most of the fans here are happy. Now, if you look at it, or if you compare both things, the one against Viacom and the one that we witnessed a couple of hours back, you could see a slight improvement from the camp of the Black Stars. And that the defense was a big goal to this time, which wasn't that shaky. But all said and done, the men up front, especially the captain of Samadhan, I personally wasn't happy about the performance of Samadhan. The way he touched on, you know, falling on the playing surface, and the way the guys heard him. Samadhan, as usual of himself, had no way, you know, to escape the plans of the Malians, and that's the defense of the Malians. Also, then, I guess all of them had a very good afternoon, especially Ivan Bota, who was in the heart of defense for Ghana, together with John Pencil.
Yeah. Having followed them for some time, do you really see them going that far? Many people are talking about, Ghanaians starting a bit slowly in tournaments. I'm asking that some are still asking whether the team can go very far, looking at the nature of performance.
Well, it could be yes and it could be no, but I just couldn't get it just that clear. But I think the team will really, you know, get up and then get doing probably after the 10th match and maybe and beyond.
What do you think will do the trick for them, looking at the caliber of players in camp?
We have a wide pool of players. The only thing is that at the moment, it seems injury is having its toll or her toll on the team. Now, if all the players fully recover, I have a strong belief that the coach that in Coach Kutiapia will put up a very, very good team, full of those that we can rely on and get counted for when the time appears. Then Ghana will definitely stay through to the other stages of the competition. But let me tell you, for what I'm saying, if you ask me personally, I think we stand the chance of driving straight into the final and of course picking a golden trophy at stake, although it wouldn't be that easy. It's not going to be that easy, but trust me, I believe Ghana can make it.
Yeah, that is moving from the group stages and then progressing. But look at the other teams along the line. Who do you think can pose a threat moving out of the group?
Well, I guess in our group, I am saying that probably Mali going through together with Ghana, but Congo can also pose a threat. Now, we have other teams that are yet to come up with their second good phase matches. South Africa, the home country, yesterday did a very good job. Well, we can put them aside. Nigeria also, you know, Nigeria has also a large number of players on the bench. They prefer the very rich bench. West Nigeria, for the north of the bench, I can treat a team like Morocco. They also have the men to even be up and get counted for when it comes to competition of this magnitude. But also then, Dan, I have a strong belief, probably it could be Ghana, South Africa in the final from what I've seen so far.
What do you say about the so-called underdogs? Niger is proving a point, even though they've not won a match.
Well, honestly, for all I can tell you, and from where I'm standing, I don't, you know, believe that there are any underdogs in the ongoing competition, because the likes of Atibet, if you look at Atibet's performance yesterday, the likes of Dia Congo, the likes of even Niger. Niger, we're still in the stadium. Niger just drew 0-0 with the Dia Congo, who managed to draw 2-2 in Ghana. This tells you, we don't have any underdogs in the ongoing competition, and more of the small countries, or the first small teams, are here with lots and lots of surprises. Obviously, this tournament safely has nothing but full of surprises. We are, you know, we are definitely going to cause surprises prior to the end of the competition.
Well, George, I know even in your voice, we can sense that tiredness. We want to leave you for now so that you can rest and give us more commentary. When is the next game?
Thank you very much, and good evening to all of you who are in Ghana. We will definitely be back on Monday when Ghana plays against Niger. By then, my voice will definitely come up, and we couldn't have nothing but a feel and pure commentary. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, George Latte, and we wish you all the best in South Africa.
Right, thank you.
George Latte is our sports commentator all the way down south in South Africa. But we come back to the studio. Benjamin Willie Graham has joined us. He's been monitoring what has been happening so far together with other files. Willie Graham, you are welcome.
Thanks a lot, Kingsley.
I posed that question to George. Many people will cheer when there is a goal, naturally.
Certainly.
But after that, a few people will still have some concerns.
Well, I guess at the moment we wouldn't have the mathematics coming in, because if you look at the group, that's Group B. We have the Black Stars leading with 4 points, and you talk about Mali with 3 points, and DR Congo, and that of Niger. They, you know, Niger certainly would have a point, and DR Congo having 2 points there. But it gives you an impression, and I believe that we are now beginning to understand the game of football, especially after, you know, growing from one end to the other. Because then at the moment you realize that we cannot write off any team at any time. You do that at your own peril. And definitely I believe that every team that is playing the Nations Cup will realize that when you're meeting a certain team called Ethiopia, or you're meeting a certain team called Niger, you certainly need to go back to the drawing board and prepare adequately before you come. And that is the reason we are seeing some splendid performances coming through from some of these teams who perhaps are making their debut appearance in the Nations Cup.
Yeah, you are talking about all of them. What do you think might be working for them? They might not be showing the stars.
Let me give you a typical example, like a team like Cape Verde. Cape Verde is not really noted for some, you know, interesting football. But the interesting aspect of Cape Verde's play is that if I'm telling you that there's this legend in Sweden, his name is Henrik Larsson. He is a native of that country called Cape Verde. There's another player who played a key role for the French national team known as Patrick Vieira. He's equally a native of Cape Verde. Now, you go on and keep mentioning very quality players who have played for different countries but yet come from Cape Verde. So when they had a chance, you know, to play in the qualifiers, what they said to themselves was that we are going to globetrot and find out the quality players who perhaps are playing football in different countries and indeed who come from this country, so we can bring them together and then fight for this country. And that is the reason we are looking at Cape Verde now, and we're looking at the quality of play in their side, and we're saying that, okay, this is a very good team, because they have gone around the world and realized that we have talent, you know, in different countries, and we can just bring them on board to come and fight for us. Cape Verde now is, in the next year or two, they will pose a bigger threat to all the teams that really are playing the Nations Cup or perhaps other competitions in Africa, and that we need to be very careful. And if you look at Niger as well, they really are equally picking themselves up in football. They have quality clubs out there who are playing the CAF and Confederations Cup, and they equally are also coming up with some interesting plays. Not also forgetting Ethiopia. One of the key players who is Said Salahuddin, the prolific striker, he plays for an Egyptian side. And certain other quality players that you have in your side, they are very good. And so I think that we are learning a very good lesson from the African Cup of Nations that we are witnessing now in South Africa, because we're seeing quality coming from the Minos that we so-called, we definitely called them some years ago. And we are realizing that these are teams that have sat back, realized their mistakes, and have really mastered the courage to correct them ahead of this competition.
Yeah. I was asking about what holds for Ghana.
Well, I think that the Black Stars, I mean, people keep making references to the fact that anytime the Black Stars is playing any competition, the fundamental thing here is that the Black Stars start slowly. Their build-up is very slow. And for that matter, it has always been an argument. People think that, no, okay, this is a cliche. It's always been there. But we need to identify the major problem. We scored two quick goals. We sat back. DR Congo, you know, got them back. Now, I have also realized that the Black Stars always make it during a difficult period. And a difficult game was this against Mali. We beat Mali during the group stages in the last edition of the Nations Cup in Gabon, Equatorial Guinea. They came back strong and beat us to fourth position.
Some say Ghanaians don't like third positions in that.
Of course. I mean, that's their own opinion on that. But the fact of the matter still remains that quality is in the play of Mali. And I have said that any time the Black Stars do find themselves really pushed to the wall, that is when you find them coming up strong, because they know that our and the stakes are very high and we need to fight very hard for this one. And so the Black Stars had to make some tweaking to the team ahead of this competition. Coach James Akosiapia realized his mistake in the first game and then said that, okay, I'm going to make some changes to the squad. And he did make the changes, and the changes worked for us. Just like the South African coach equally did to his side and led them to win 2-0 against Angola.
Benjamin Willie Graham, you know, we'll be picking up some of the issues in relation to the Black Stars again. But for now, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Kinsley.
You are still live on Behind the News, and you are getting us live on Sunrise FM, and you are also live on Radio Savannah. Earlier on our story in relation to the vetting of the ministerial nominees, it was a bit of a challenge getting on the line. Our correspondent, Augustus Okwe, is now joined us, and let's see whether it works this time. Hello, Augustus.
Hello, Kingsley.
Yes, naturally, people were looking at the vetting with the eye of not having a side represented, that is the minority, because of the boycott. Can you describe the atmosphere for us?
Well, since the minority caucus on the appointment committee had indicated that they were not going to be part of the vetting process, I guess everyone expected it to happen, and so it really didn't raise that much of an issue. Just that we especially the journalists, thought that their presence there would have brought up certain questions that might make the news for us, certain controversial questions that might make the news for us. But as members sat, and it became clear when the chairman walked in that the minority caucus was not joining the appointment committee, it was business as usual. They went ahead all the same. And I think they made progress. They made progress.
Yeah, but do you think the questions were really touched on effectively by the nominees?
Yes, I think they were properly briefed, especially with the Minister of Finance designate. He gave more in-depth answers to the questions given him. In fact, I spoke to him right after he had finished his session, and he indicated that since this is not the first time, he had really prepared to face them. And so he even thought that he could be given more time to expatiate on some of the things that he said. Hannah Tete did the same. A few journalists said that she really didn't give much substance in the submissions that he gave, but since the appointment committee were okay with what she said. Now, it has to be given. For instance, when it comes to Seth Tepe, he is already in the ministry, and so he knows the ins and outs. Hannah Tete will be going to a different ministry from the trade ministry she is comfortable with now, and she's not expected to really go into the specifics when it comes to the questions that is posed to her. Alhaji Kolenzauda also gave a very good account of the work he would do. He's given the nod, and he knew some statistics. He talked about the affordable housing project and how far it has gone and what it needs to be able to be completed. And he talked about drilling of boreholes in communities. He dwells on the rent issue, but like a grown politician or a matured politician, and he was asked a question about what he would do specifically aside allocation of more resources to the rent control board for them to be able to give tenants a cushion or an ear or address the issues that tenants face when it comes to payment of rent advances and ejection, forceful ejections by landlords. He played a bit of the politician in him, saying that he was not there. So, in fact, the question, if my memory serves me right, was posed by the member for Lejekuku Krowo, Benita Okitidua, and then he noted that since the question said there were rumors that, I think it was Julian Minister, said there were rumors that some landlords possibly decked away in their tenancy and all that. And he said that he can't answer that because it has not been substantiated and he's yet to get to that ministry. But what he would do was to make sure that there are mechanisms put in place to help address the issue of housing deficits and help tenants get value for them, the money they give.
Okay, Augustus, we'll leave you here for now. But would you say yes or no to this one before you go? Were they treated with kid gloves?
Were they
treated with kid gloves? Was it a soft ride?
To a certain degree, yes. They didn't give them the pat on the back kind of situation that people were expecting, since it was going to be a one-sided affair. They raised certain questions that I thought that made the pulled the nominees out of their comfort zones, and so. But if the minority were there, then we'd have seen more of that. But since they were absent, then we saw less of that.
I want to thank you very much for this one.
You're welcome.
Augustus Akwe is our correspondent in Parliament. Dr. Joe Abbey is the Executive Director of the Center for Policy Analysis, CEPA. He's also joined us on the line as we look at the issue. So you're welcome, sir. Hello, Dr. Joe Abbey. I guess that particular line has got a bit of a challenge. We'll try to get back to you. You are still live on Behind the News, and you are getting us on Twin City Radio. You are also live on Radio Central and also on Volta Star. We'll be back. Well, we have Dr. Joe Abbey back on the line. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
You were monitoring what's transpired earlier in the day. What is your general assessment of the vetting?
Sorry to disappoint you. I got caught in meetings, so I've heard the news about what happened. I did not have the privilege to be monitoring directly.
Many people have expressed some concern that we didn't have the minority joining the vetting. Do you think it stands in any way to hurt the process?
I feel saddened, to be quite honest about it. I'm very saddened about the impasse that we are running through, and I hope that by God's grace, we resolve these matters so we can get to a period of normalcy. The economy requires getting together and putting the politics aside and tackling the economic issues that are in front of us after the election year 2012. So I feel very sad about what is happening, but I can't do anything about it. The democracy, people should seek justice where the institutions say, and that's where we are. But the nation could pay a big price for what's happening.
Yes. Dr. Abbe, I'll please like you to hold on for a moment. We have this particular issue we want to explore, so you please listen to the Minister Designate for Finance, and then we'll come back to you so that you can respond on that one.
We are moving the revenue collection system to an electronic platform that is underway, all aimed at improving the efficiency of revenue collection in the system. Many of our tax laws are 15 years old, some are actually 20. We want to do a comprehensive review of the three major tax laws, VAT, income tax, customs, and indeed do a tax administration act. So one of my priorities would be to work with the August House to make sure that we give the country new tax laws. We are doing reorganization. We are improving processes and systems, including electronic platforms. We would depend on the goodwill of the House to help us give the nation new and improved tax laws.
Well, Dr. Abbey, we are talking about taxation. During campaigning, we don't hear so much of people talking about really gathering the little bits of contributions from the people. How do you think new tax laws can help us?
Well, this is a difficult area. And in that regard, after the parliamentary vetting service, we may be lucky that we do have somebody that can be described as a tax expert. Some of our forays into this area have not been that successful. There was a move to raise taxation on our mining sector. A number of initiatives. This led to protestations from the mining companies, and I believe we've put things on hold. The world, the key institutions like World Bank and IMF, have also drawn attention to the fact that Africa may not be getting a fair shake from its mineral deposits. So there is a big issue there about how to ensure that we work with the mining companies to make sure that there's a fair distribution of the returns to our mining. For example, we do know, and the PIAC has pointed out, that the oil mining companies, because of the incentives we give them about their recovery of their capital investments, are not paying corporate taxes.
Mm.
And this in itself is creating big problems. But it's a technical issue about the inducement that we seem to have given to them, that because our fields are relatively small. Look, at the maximum production of 100,000 barrels a day, it's not funny, but Nigeria is reported to lose 80,000 barrels a day in their oil mining area. And Ghana's peak production is 120,000. Ghana at 120,000 may not be producing at that peak level for more than 5 years. Nigeria produces 2.5 million barrels a day, and they have enough reserves for 50 years. So this whole area of fair distribution of burdens that I do hope will be taken up very quickly so that Ghana gets a good shake out of our minerals, gold as well as oil and other minerals. So I'm looking forward to any initiatives. It is also clear that our revenue mobilization effort must be taken very seriously. We have long porous borders, a lot of smuggling of Ghanaian produce and as well as imports. So we've got to be very careful about how we manage this area. We lost 1 year in 2010 just debating how to staff the Ghana Revenue Authority. We lost 2010 for nothing, because sometimes politicians prefer loyalty to competence. And it was not until 2011 that the Ghana Revenue Authority became fully functional. And it showed its impact immediately, because it raised our tax revenue mobilization by 4 percentage points of GDP. So we need to get to work almost immediately and make sure that we give the GRA all the support that they need to lead the way, because we cannot reduce the deficit by compressing spending. There is very little room for reducing spending. The wage bill is there. We can't do too much about it. The infrastructure deficiencies are there. We need to catch up. We have huge human capital development needs, education, health, sanitation, water. We need a skilled, knowledgeable workforce, which is moreover healthy. There's no use training people if we lose their work to illness. So I think that we need to take these matters very seriously. I, for one, feel happy that we've run through our elections of 2012. Our court is cut for us. We need to get back to the drawing board and give support in every way to make sure that we are successful.
Yeah. Dr. Abbey, sometimes you want to attract businesses, and we also introduce the tax holidays for some of these businesses. But some tax experts are saying that others are also taking undue advantage of what they see as loopholes and exploiting the system. Do you think we can ever plug such loopholes?
This happens everywhere. This is nothing new. We keep sometimes behaving as if we are in a beauty contest trying to attract foreign direct investment. And we give all manner of incentives for people to come. And they come here and they use their tax holiday periods and recoup themselves. We have a lot of dying European and other businesses coming to Ghana to save themselves. There are many, many examples of companies that rather used the fact that we are very busy trying to induce foreign investment, and we give away everything. So we've reached a point where we can't afford to go on that way. And I'm looking forward, after the elections, to getting back to the drawing board and making sure that policy is increasingly based on evidence, not some suppositional theory waiting for problems to solve. We need to get to be pragmatic and make sure that we domesticate our policies and we all work around how to make sure that we succeed. We should leave the politicking aside and get to want Ghana to be successful. So I think that all these things, everybody must show some basis for whatever we advocate and stop these types of things, wishing that somebody will fail, as if the failure is not payable by us. So I'm looking forward to identifying concrete issues and bringing our minds together to find solutions to our problems. Communication is the name of the game.
Yeah. Doc, I would like you to hold on once again. We are talking about using our human resources very well because they are those who cater for whatever we are doing. We'll listen to another from Mr. Tekme and come back to you in a moment.
All right. Okay.
We are collaborating with the Public Services Commission and the Head of Civil Service because the issue the Honorable Member raised is a very good example of a potential employee who has just finished school as a nurse or as a teacher, who is going into the public service, and you do not have record about that employee. An employee who is promoted, and you do not have record about the employee. Or somebody who leaves, and resulting in the ghost names that we have been mentioning. These are not typical payroll issues. They are lack of management of a human resource management system. And so, to complement the payroll, we are collaborating with Office of Head of Civil Service and Public Service Commission to put, you know, a human resource management system. If we do not wish to go to the fund, as countries like Botswana, Trinidad and Tobago, and others, and I'm citing countries that are in our league, have done, we manage our affairs well, and we go to the fund only in emergencies. For example, when we have a slump in commodity prices, and we need to beef up our reserves. But if we have the sort of fiscal indiscipline issues that we've been talking about, you'll be forced to go to the fund and to other institutions. And so I think the answer is for us to manage effectively. And I believe with that and additional resources coming in, we do not have to go to the fund routinely.
Well, Dr. Joe Abi, that is what we are talking about again. Human management, human resource management is coming up for a discussion. Normally, we want to blame some of our problems on unjust world economic order. We are not getting right prices for our commodities. But we have been told that right here, there are things we can do. What are we not doing right in this case?
Well, I'm glad that you raised the fact that we keep our problems. Look, if my bosses have said that if it's raining, it is not very useful to be the only one complaining that it's raining. If commodity prices are not doing well, how are other commodity exporting countries coping? So to always say that somebody else is to blame is not useful. What you said carries a lot of things that we must all get to work on. The idea that we can be toying, we've been toying for years about ghost workers. We know very well that we are playing. There are no ghost workers. They are illegitimate people being paid with taxpayers' money. And we must get to be serious about this. Somebody has put a name into the public payroll, and the money gets taken. And we're playing with ghosts. We are not serious. Fraud. We must make it clear that anybody that illegitimately puts a name on any government payroll and then pays out the money, that there will be consequences, that we will catch up with that person and deal with that person. It is not acceptable. There's so much poverty around for very hardworking people. So we should stop playing with the person or ghosts that we know very well are not ghosts. How do the ghosts take the pay and chop? And if the pay is paid to the bank, we are incapable of finding who has been drawing the money out. So those things must stop. The game playing, ghost workers, shoddy work, underground work for which payments are made, judgment debts. We should stop playing with these things. It is sad that somebody can produce a report which says that we don't even have clear job descriptions in very many areas of the public service. No job descriptions. But we pay them. And we blame people. So we've reached a point where the public is too big. There are no jobs. Look at the queues that I read forming at Ghana Fast. And you ask yourself, if this doesn't represent this picture, what does? What is the link between the typical graduate from secondary or even BEC? What is the link between whatever they've learned and working in the fire service? You can see that there's sheer desperation. And unfortunately, we are not picking these things about job creation. It should be central. Whatever we do, we must be asking ourselves, and it's not the government that will create the jobs. It's the private sector. And year after year, the private sector has been alluding to some of the costs of doing business, which may be inhibiting the expansion, particularly the manufacturing sector. People have been talking about access to credit, cost of credit. We've reached a point where we should stop the debate, get to the hard facts about the determinants of lending rates, which are paid by our SMEs, not the large multinationals or even the large indigenous. It's the SMEs. 2012 statistics, credit growth 39% to the private sector. Meanwhile, credit to SMEs contracted. Now we've had elections. We've got to go back, take the minister at his word, find the empirical underpinnings of the issues, and work together to solve them. We must want Ghana to succeed. That is all that I can say. The situation of education, the world is moving very fast. We need workers that are knowledgeable, that are trainable, that can be flexible, move up the technology ladder. That's the way of the world. Ghana can't sit outside and pretend that we can live by ourselves. We need to be part of the world economy. So we need to be asking, how are we going to be part of the global economy and succeed within that context? So for me, we've gone through a difficult year. We've had a currency crisis. Now these issues about the debt, the size of the deficit. The deficit is nothing more than an indication of how much borrowing the government will have to do. We've locked ourselves in 3 to 5 year bonds, 3.3 billion cedis worth, average interest rate 22%. Over the next 3 to 5 years, we'll be paying more than 4% of our GDP on interest charges. So the debate must stop. We've got to get back to identifying the issues. The SSS, it has raised the bill. We can't blame anybody for it. But there are still complaints from important segments of health and education of dissatisfaction. We need to get a full account about the implementation of the SSS and whatever the problems may be to fix them and get on with our lives. We can't just go on debating, arguing, taunting, and so on. So the ministers' issues, as I've listened, go to the problems as I know them. The question now is, how do we together? Because it's not a question of whether the tech succeeds or fails.
Yeah.
If a major ministry like finance, economic planning, or even finance, as I hear, to fail, it is Ghana that will pay the price for it. So we must work to make sure that the Ministry of Finance leads the way and we are able to get our finances in order. That's all that I know. But we need to be able to work with the unions and make sure that together we can raise productivity. That is the only way we can raise wages. We cannot raise wages if we don't have the productivity, because somebody must pay for the wages. If we have productivity, it means the worker pays through the contribution to the national effort. The worker earns his or her keep. If productivity is low, then even peanuts payment will still be excessive because somebody is paying taxes to sustain a job that doesn't pay for itself. So we need to be very serious and worry not about just those who have jobs, but the teeming 400,000 young people enter the labor force a year.
Mm-hmm.
We should be as worried, even more worried, about the consequences of these large numbers not having jobs. Parents who have sacrificed to sustain these kids, they're now 18 to 25, 26. To be unemployed gives a sinking feeling to those parents. So you can call your growth numbers, you can call your inflation. What do you care about inflation when you don't have income? Mm-hmm. Whether prices are falling or not, if you don't have income to enter the stadium and watch the match, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter to you whether inflation is one digit, single digit, whatever you do,
yeah.
it's meaningless. So we must make sure that jobs, job creation, and the state cannot do it.
Uh-huh.
It is how to work with the private sector mm-hmm. to make sure that we have jobs.
Dr. Adeoye, yes. At least we'll try to get you one of these days together with Mr. Setekwe so that we see how best practically we can find
any way that we all join in to make Ghana successful. We should all join in.
We're going to thank you so much for your views tonight.
Thank you.
Dr. Joe Abbey is the Executive Director of the Center for Policy Analysis and Economic Think Tank. You are still live on Behind the News, and across the globe, you are getting us on gdcghana.com. The escalating conflict in Mali is said to be putting thousands of people in a terrible condition, needing urgent food and water to save them from hunger and death. A report published by Oxfam said if the international community fails to act immediately, in the coming weeks, we'll see thousands of civilian deaths. An official of Oxfam, Ilaria Allegrozzi, Policy and Campaigns Manager, Oxfam Mali, have joined us on the line. We'll be talking to that official very soon. But before then, that issue came up at the vetting today.
Indeed, the situation in Mali is quite troubling. There has been an insurgency in Mali since the beginning of last year. There has been the takeover of the northern part of Mali by some terrorist groups and extremists, Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, among others, that have created a situation where Mali has in fact become unstable. Indeed, my understanding was that at the time when the interim president of Mali invited French intervention to help them to deal with the rebel insurgency, it was because they were hours away from their capital, which was Bamako. And I think that it would have been a very serious threat to all of us within the sub-region if that country had been overridden by terrorist-related organizations.
Well, Minister Designate for Foreign Affairs, Hannah Tete, responding to some of the issues earlier in the day. Ilaria Allegrozzi is now on the line with us. You are welcome. Hello?
Hello.
Yes. You've heard Foreign Minister Designate talking about the issues. Can you paint a picture for those who do not know precisely what is happening now in Mali?
Well, the situation in Bamako, where I'm based and where my office is based, the office of Octo, is calm. However, of course, there's a great deal of uncertainty as well as concerns over the humanitarian situation in the country, which is rapidly degrading since the launching of the military operations 2 weeks ago in the center and northern regions of the country. And we are worried that this escalation of conflict will have serious humanitarian consequences and increase the needs of an already vulnerable population, which was affected by a devastating food crisis in 2012. And at the moment, access to conflict zones is very restricted. So although we are ready to go there, access is limited. And it is important that the Malian authorities grant access to humanitarian NGOs, not only to deliver assistance, but also to assess the needs of the population which has been affected by the conflict.
Yeah. Does that mean that even for the capital, Bamako, there is need for some support of some sort because some people will be moving, some refugees will be moving to that place? Hello, Laria?
Yeah.
Yes. We are asking whether the situation is so even in the capital, Bamako.
The situation is calm, and as I said, there's uncertainty among the population and there are concerns about the consequences of the conflict, especially in the north. As far as the humanitarian situation is concerned, I think that the needs of the people are increasing in terms of food, water and shelter. There are IDPs in Bamako, people who have left everything behind and fled to the south of Mali, trying to find refuge in hosting families as well as into neighboring countries in Burkina Faso, in Niger and Mauritania.
So far, what have you been able to do as Oxfam, trying to mobilize all the other aid agencies to assist?
Sorry?
I'm asking what you've been able to do as Oxfam to get on board other aid agencies.
Not sure I understood the question. The network is very bad. At the time, Oxfam is intervening in the north of Mali through food security and water and sanitation programs, as well as in the south of Mali. But in a time when all the international community is very much focused on military solutions, I think that now for Oxfam it is important to ask for more attention to be paid for the humanitarian consequences of the conflict.
So you give a figure of about 147,000 people needing urgent food aid to survive. Did you do some census?
I'm sorry. Say it again.
We're asking, you are estimating that about 147,000 people now need urgent food aid to survive. And we're asking whether you did some census or it was just by estimation.
This figure, 147,000 people, come from the UN Refugee Agency and accounts for all demanding people who have already fled their homes to find the shelter into refugee camps of neighboring countries. And this figure is expected to rise significantly following the escalation of violence in northern Mali. And in fact, we already have observed some new arrivals into refugee camps, and we estimate that almost 10,000 people have already left their homes since the launching of the French and Malian military operations. And in addition to this figure, there are also more than 200,000 internally displaced people who fled the north of Mali to the southern regions, including Bamako, where you have more than 46,000 IDPs.
Yeah. So for now, how are you managing the situation? At least you are on the ground already.
We are on the ground already at the moment. However, access is very restricted, and humanitarian organizations can't access those areas where the people need us the most. That's why it is very important to ensure that humanitarian agencies can access the conflict-affected communities and zones to deliver assistance, to deliver life-saving assistance.
Well, we know the message will be going around, especially as we've spoken on it, and there are some concerns and notices going around. But for now, I want to thank you so much and encourage you that at least you continue to assist those who are in need. Ilaria Allegrozzi is an official of Oxfam in charge of policy and campaigns manager, Oxfam Mali. You might have detected the breaks in the line there because we're getting there all the way from Bamako. You are still live on Behind the News. Behind the News, you are getting us on Garden City Radio Kumasi and also on Radio BAR Sunyang. This one is saying, what a splendid performance by Honorable Seth Tekpe. Indeed, the man deserves the nod. That is coming from Mohammed and Gandibuna Evans from Wabusi. He says, why did the minority MPs take the oath of parliament? They are taking our money and refusing to work as MPs. And Evans from Accra, I'm happy some members of MPP are not in support of the minority MPs decision. This is to show that the MPP has no future in 2016. And Ajua Ashia from Dodwa, the absence of the minority MPs has really taken the shine away out of the vetting. The ministerial nominees have really had a field day. And Benedicta Bediakun from Ashaman, the vetting without the probing questions by the MPP side has rendered the vetting process a one-way traffic. There is absolutely no question that passes a challenge, that poses a challenge to the nominees. And AU Farouk Tamale, bravo to the appointment committee for their wonderful and excellent work done. And Dan K from Spintest, the decision taken by the minority would go a long way to affect the country's development. And Mauli Kubi, Wasel Kropon, will the minority do business with the nominees if they become ministers? I want to know. Well, when we get them, we'll direct the issues to them appropriately. That's live on Behind the News, and joining us on the line now is Osechi Mensah Bunso, Minority Leader in Parliament. Welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me.
I would like to give this question directly before we even get to other issues, coming from someone who sent in a text. That person is asking, will the minority do business with the nominees if they become ministers? He wants to know, one Maulif Kubi from Wasekropong.
Come again, I didn't get the question clearly.
One Maulif Kubi from Wasekropong is asking whether the minority will do business with the nominees if they become ministers.
With the nominees if they become ministers?
Yes.
Well, we as a party sent out a statement. I think it was a declaration of intent. And anybody who understands the Queen's English would understand what we mean. The principles that we have set out, they are all contained in the statement that we issued. So if you have that statement, I guess you would let the person know what the intent is.
Maybe the person would like to hear it directly from you, being the leader
of the other side. Why should we repeat it? We have indicated a principle that we are convinced and persuaded by the force of the compelling evidence that is in court in respect of the declaration of candidate John Mahama as the president. And that we believe that given the weight and volume of evidence before the Supreme Court, we are convinced and persuaded that with the declaration of the Supreme Court, the empire or the regime of John Mahama will collapse, and with it, all his appointments. So we have indicated that those structures that he is constructing, which not have left him, we are not going to participate in.
Yeah.
Like Pontius Pilate has washed his hands off the affairs of the crucifixion of Jesus Christ.
Mr. Sajid Mensah-Bunsi,
so that would outlive the president. We participate in.
Good.
Including, of course, for instance, the making of bills, the contracting of loans, the budget, for instance. I mean, so the line of demarcation is clearly spelled out in the release that we came out with.
But as you say, you do agree that on the 7th of January, by our constitution, we get in a president, and he's been sworn in by the Chief Justice. So you do agree we have a president as of now?
Undoubtedly.
Yes. And the president is doing his legitimate business.
The constitution abhors vacuum.
And that vacuum includes getting ministers in place, not to have that vacuum there.
The constitution abhors vacuum. And so the constitution intends that by the 7th of January, there must be a president who will be sworn in, rightly or wrongly. And it is our understanding that what was done in respect of candidate John Mahama was premised on a red note, for which reason we are in court seeking the invalidation of that declaration by Dr. Afarijan. Now, for that reason, we did not participate in the coronation of candidate John Mahama.
Now, you do agree it's a constitutional requirement that was done by a Chief Justice, put in place, legal person.
I've told you.
Constitutionally mandated.
She did that because the constitution above vacuum. That doesn't mean that what was done was right.
So, then let's get it right. It means, do you recognize the president?
Come again?
Do you recognize the president?
By the processes that you have set in motion, I think you should understand what the intent is.
No, sometimes we want a direct one. People want to know, because the recognition comes with recognizing whatever action.
The validity of the declaration of the Electoral Commission,
which culminated
in the coronation of the president, candidate John Mahama, as the president. So, to all intents and purposes, we are indicating, and we have sounded, that declaration was wrongful.
Some members from your camp are saying that you are not even trumpeting what they want done. ensuring that within this space, let's even assume before the decision, at least you've heard you've heard a founding member of the NPP, Riku Brobi, talk about the issue.
I guess you know the content of the Political Parties Act. No single individual can be a founding member of two political parties. You know that. You know that. Dr. Charles Rokumbrebe claims to be a founding member of the NPP. At the same time, he is the originator and founding father of the UGM. Which political party, he says, is on leave? Can he be? Can he remain a founding member of the NPP?
So let's come back to where we started it from.
Can I please finish?
Yes, because there are questions and we are working within our time too.
No, but you put out a statement,
mm-hmm.
and I'm telling you that the premise of that statement is wrongful. That foundation is wobbly.
So for now, you say you don't recognize him as a founding member. That is what you are saying, by what you are citing.
I am telling you that the Political Parties Act says no single individual can be a founding member of two political parties.
We don't want it sounding equivocal. We want it from you.
And when he formed the UGM and was the founding father of the UGM, he ceased to be a member of the MPP. And the constitution of the MPP is clear on that. That if you, as a member of the MPP, declare your allegiance for an independent political parliament or independent member who wants to contest as a president.
Can we come back to the issue we are discussing now? Let's come back to the issue. That is not the main one. It was introduced to at least clarify a few things. So for now, you say you don't recognize the president. You are not going to work on the appointment committee. Let's assume that the Supreme Court decides this is the president we are working with for the next 4 years. What would you say about this action?
If the Supreme Court decides against the compelling evidence that we have provided, we are saying that we will live by that.
Okay. We want to thank you very much, sir.
Well, thank you for having me.
The minority leader on the line, Osechi Mensabunso, behind the news. We've been live from our studios here in Accra. Two tests before we go. This one from Kojo Kings, Cape Coast. Ghanaians should stop their usual mathematical formation, but go all out to win the last match. Nothing less. And this one from Isaac Ubindam Kintampo. Congratulations, Blasters, for defeating Mali. It's already written. The trophy is ours. We are bringing it home. That is a very hopeful thoughts coming from there. And this is where we wrap it up for today. We want to thank you all out there, and for our technicians, Isaac Yawedu, who's at the controls, and production team of Christopher Sidu, Bright Agama, Edmond Tete, Agatha Samwa, and John Pubi. Our summarizer was Doreen Ampofu. My name is Kingsley of Interest.